Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.co.uk/sportsadfree. That's amazon.co.uk/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We always back an arse in the Grand National.
Just can't beat it.
That's the one everyone wants to win.
The one we've all been waiting for.
I love the National, but absolutely zero strategy behind who I choose.
I'm an each way man. I'll pick some at further outfield.
To be honest, my favourite, Nate.
I always pick the favourite.
I back the outsider.
Whatever colour top they're wearing, that's me.
However you pick your Grand National horse, Betfred.
And they're off.
Love the National.
Betfred.
18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. On this week's episode, we're diving into a big topic, which is 1 year after the launch of Major League Soccer, their streaming product, MLS Season Pass. We're going to go through and talk about the pros and cons after 1 year. How's it doing? What areas can it improve upon? What areas has it improved upon? And there have been many, really, to give it kind of a deep thought analysis on this big topic for what is really one of the most revolutionary soccer streaming products out there. No one else is doing anything like this. Before we get into that, we want to talk about just a little bit, too, is that I think in terms of covering MLS Season Pass, no one's written more about it than World Soccer Talk. Kartik, you and I have watched, hundreds of hours in the past year of watching MLS Season Pass, the pregame, the games, the MLS 360, the whip around show, the post-match, etc. And I think we've talked about it too on this podcast many, many times. But what we haven't done is just done a deep dive on the pros and cons. And before we can get into the pros and cons, I think what we need to talk about too is the market conditions. Because what's happening in the industry right now is having, I believe, an impact on MLS Season Pass. And some of these things are things that Major League Soccer can't control. These are things that are happening outside of MLS that are having a direct impact on subscriptions to MLS Season Pass. So before we get into that, anything more to add before we dive in, Kartik?
No, I think that that's the market conditions are always evolving, which is the thing I would preface our entire discussion by saying is that this is a 10-year deal. So part of the 10-year deal, of making a 10-year deal and going long-term, which soccer leagues tend not to do, is to anticipate what those market conditions might be in the future. So MLS made assumptions based on probably well-researched market data and analytics they were using to assess the media landscape. But it seems like the market conditions, which you're about to talk about, Chris, have already changed pretty dramatically since this deal was signed in June of 2022, it would be. So almost 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a 10-year deal. It's a basically the way the deal works, too, is that Apple is paying Major League Soccer $250 million a year for the global rights to show all the games and also Leagues Cup, of course. But it is a rev share deal. It's a revenue share deal. So that if Major League Soccer hits a certain number of subscribers, they will then kind of anything above and beyond that, they will get 50%. So it's a unique deal in that too, because it incentivizes Major League Soccer to really, really do a fantastic job in partnership with Apple to get as many subscribers as possible to make this a win-win. And that's another reason why this could be a revolutionary deal. But there are some issues that are forming basically kind of a brick wall and preventing some people from subscribing or watching. And let's talk about some of those too before we go into the pros and cons. So I think the big market condition, I think for me, Kartik, is there's a greater availability of games that are now available to watch for free. And we've got CBS Sports Golazo Network. There's USL games on free over the CBS network, as we saw this past weekend. NWSL games on ION. You've got the Premier League matches still on NBC, et cetera, et cetera. And when you have games available for free, it makes it that much harder for people to want to pay for MLS Season Pass, especially when it's the most expensive soccer streaming product out there. What's your take on the whole concept of free? Because this is relatively a new thing in some ways in terms of, I think a lot of the fans out there, a certain portion of them, expecting to be able to watch soccer for free. I mean, other than over-the-air, free-to-air, over-the-air games in the past, which are pretty rare, now I think there's a lot of people out there expecting free content.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, MLS was off of ABC and off of Big Fox completely. People forget that the broadcast windows that were picked up by Big Fox and ABC in conjunction with the ESPN deal only happened 2017, 2018. Now, you and I remember going back to the 1999 MLS season when they had 15 games a year on ABC. And then that got cut for 2000 as MLS was struggling. And then they lost broadcast maybe one or two games on ABC and then lost it completely. So you're paying for everything, right? But it's a matter of what your value for paying is. A lot of MLS fans have come back and gotten very defensive and angry when you say USL is more accessible or NWSL is more accessible now. But here's the reality. I'm not basing that on my own personal experience. I'm basing it on what people tell me, what people who were, you know, would stumble upon MLS games on linear television in the past, people who are soccer fans, but they're kind of casual. They may be more into Chelsea or into Real Madrid or whoever. When they would also watch MLS games because they were on ESPN Plus, right? And they subscribe to ESPN Plus anyway because maybe they're a college football fan or maybe they're a fan of another sport or maybe they signed up because it had the Bundesliga or it had Serie A one time. So MLS was kind of an add-on and they were watching and tracking MLS. Now suddenly, because the algorithm works in the ways it does on ESPN Plus, where there used to be MLS live broadcasts, suddenly there are USL games popping up on their ESPN Plus. And they're watching those instead. This isn't my personal experience. This is what people tell me. And I have ample anecdotal evidence to say this. Now, I don't have the same anecdotal evidence with NWSL. I don't know of people who were watching MLS who are now watching NWSL instead. However, we have seen the numbers, the actual hard data about NWSL broadcast. Maybe it's a completely different subset, but it still represents competition because it's on at the same time. It's on accessible channels, whether it's ION or whether it's Paramount Plus or Amazon Prime, which, by the way, lots of people subscribe to for other reasons. And they're not saying, oh, we're going to pay whatever a month or whatever a year. It's a fee for a year because NWSL's there. No, it's an add-on, right, to what they already buy Prime for. Whereas Apple Season Pass, even if you have Apple TV Plus, is going to cost you an additional, insignificant fee a month to just access MLS. And Chris, you and I went through the NBC Sports Gold controversy with the Premier League, where Premier League fans had gotten everything for what they thought was, quote, free from NBC the first several years NBC had the Premier League because they had the, I can't even remember what it's called now, Extra Time or whatever, which you got all the other games. If you had Comcast, if you had DirecTV, if you had certain cable systems. Now, in fact, you were paying for that on your cable bill, but to people, they just don't think of it that way. It just was part of their cable bill. And then suddenly when NBC said, we're going to charge you 40, I can't remember what it was, gold. I mean, I bought gold every year.
Yeah, so I think it was 50 bucks a month. 50 bucks a season, I think.
Yeah, $49.99. Yeah. I mean, people were crazy angry. And maybe a lot of MLS fans don't remember that because they don't follow the Premier League, but we had a similar reaction. And then there was a similar reaction to Peacock. But ultimately, it subsided because the market adjusted to it. Season pass is something totally different, it feels like.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is that just in the last, 2 to 3 years, there's been the launch of FAST, which is free ad-supported television. So really, sites or services like Pluto have been around for longer, but in the last 2 to 3 years, they've really kind of taken off big time, right? I think a lot of it was during COVID or post-COVID, when people were watching content for free, just hours and hours, just binge-watching Tubi or whatever it may be. So a year ago was the launch of CBS Sports' Golazo Network. And the amount of free content or free games that you can watch on that service throughout the week, it's a wide variety of things, from women's soccer to second division soccer. Sometimes it's the US team or whoever it may be, sometimes some big games. The idea is to kind of upsell you and try to get you to subscribe to Paramount Plus. But I know there's a bunch of people out there that are watching CBS Sports Golazo Network, and they're happy with that. They're getting the soccer fill. It's a little bit random, but they're getting some good content there.
Yeah, that's actually thank you, Chris, for mentioning that. That's a big part of my anecdotal evidence. People who had no interest in USL, who I would say, hey, I support Miami FC. They're a USL team. That's why I watch USL a lot more than I watch MLS. And then obviously, I'm a lower division guy. I worked for Fort Lauderdale, worked in NASL. But now I have people just like randomly telling me, oh, I watched Orange County SC, or I watched Charleston or Pittsburgh. And yeah, that's what, because Golazo now is showing USL every Saturday night. Oftentimes double headers. This past weekend it was a double header. This week it'll just be one game, but then it's a double header the following weekend. And people who are just like randomly, because that's fast, right? That's free ad supported television, are watching Golazo because it is what is on Pluto. And in fact, I talked to someone this week who is an Inter Miami fan, who told me outside of Inter Miami, they're watching more USL because they don't pay for all these things, right? Mm-hmm. And they find ways to watch the Inter Miami. I don't want to get into like illegal streaming stuff, but or just whatever. But they find ways to follow Inter Miami. Otherwise, they're watching USL because Golazo is free and is ad supported. Now, I do think that if you're kind of a traditional television viewer, it's much easier to navigate Apple TV Plus, right, and get the MLS games on there than it might be to go to Pluto TV, find Golazo Network, and then just sit and watch like the stream of Golazo all night.
I don't know about that.
Oh yeah, maybe you're, yeah. I'm just maybe speaking for myself, right?
Yeah.
My conversations with people say that kind of support your point of view, that more of them are just doing that. They're going to Golazo. They're leaving it on. Maybe they're even watching Serie A or whatever's on, Argentine League, whatever before it. And then they're just watching USL instead of MLS as a result.
Yeah, for some people that might be the case in terms of easier to navigate Apple TV Plus than it is for Pluto TV. I would argue the opposite. I'd say that for taking someone off the street and saying to them, okay, hey, if you want to watch all of the Inter Miami games or MLS games or Leagues Cup games, here's how it works. And you describe kind of what Apple TV is. And then you say, okay, well, that's different than Apple TV Plus. And they get confused. And then you can say, okay, well, if you do get Apple TV Plus, you can get MLS season pass at a discount. But then how much am I paying? Okay, so I have an Android device. And so how do I watch the games on my phone? You can't, unless you do it through a browser. But then, the hoops and hurdles. I guess if you're in the Apple ecosystem and you already have Apple TV Plus, then yeah, that's great. I think it's easier to understand. At the same time, Apple TV Plus, in terms of all the different streaming platforms out there, it has one of the lower in the top 10 number of subscribers. So it's not that popular. But we'll get more into that in a little bit too when we get talking about Android, I think. To me, the second thing that is one of those market conditions out there, which is related to the previous point, is that there's more competition from other leagues and it's greater than ever before. At the same time that, since MLS Season Pass has launched, you've got NWSL with a major new TV deal. You have the Americans continuing to take flights in Serie A. And also, it's no coincidence that the top six Premier League matches, the most watched matches of all time in US history, have all occurred in the same period since MLS Season Pass launched, just like 14 months ago, basically. What's your take on the competition, Kartik? I mean, is the competition having an impact on MLS Season Pass subscribers or subscriptions?
Yeah, it has. It definitely is a situation where competition has taken its toll on MLS Season Pass. I think MLS fans are very loyal, and many of them are quite evangelical about the league, right? I mean, any critique they push back on. And in a lot of cases, I think they're right, quite frankly. I know that might get some people who listen to this podcast angry, but I do think there are people who shape narratives out there that just want to beat up on MLS for no other reason than they want to beat up on MLS. But again, anecdotal evidence, but then we have hard TV numbers data that you'll get into this week, Chris, that show there is a shift occurring because the price point is just too high for Apple Season Pass when you consider it's just MLS Season Pass. It's just MLS. So the pushback has been, oh, well, if you add up all the streaming services that you have to buy to get NWSL or get USL, it costs more. Well, actually, it may or it may not, depending on whether you go with the ad-supported one or the non-ad-supported one, right? If you buy Paramount Plus at the lower rate, then no. Although, and then, of course, you have to buy cable to get the CBS Sports Network games. I think that factors in on USL. And then ION is free to air, but in some places you need cable, right? It depends where you live. But, again, you're buying those in a lot of cases. In most cases, people already have paid for that stuff. They have Paramount Plus. They have they've downloaded the Pluto TV app. They have ESPN Plus. They have Amazon Prime. And this is just a bonus. So they don't feel like they're shelving out $13 a month or $15 a month to buy it. And similarly, the Premier League, I know there's a lot on Peacock, but there's half the games are still on broadcast television, whether it's on linear television, whether it's USA Network or whether it's NBC over the air. And then you have the situation with La Liga and Bundesliga, where every single match is on ESPN Plus. So you're paying, even if you were just to pay for ESPN Plus because you're a big La Liga fan, right? You're a big Sociedad fan. You want to watch every Sociedad match. It's still going to cost you less than the MLS Season Pass. And I know, like, MLS people get very hypersensitive, Chris, when this issue comes up, because they say, oh, and you're the first one who actually pointed this out, even before MLS itself did. You don't need to have an iOS device to watch these games, or you don't have to have the hockey puck Apple TV box. But there is still confusion about this in the market. There are still lots and lots of people who say, I have an Android phone, I have a Microsoft computer, I have a Roku stick, I can't watch MLS. And while that's not true, that's still the perception among lots and lots of people. I don't know why it is, but it is.
Yeah, I think part of it too is it's for some people it's a hassle, right? They want to watch the big game this weekend, so whatever game that may be, they're comfortable switching on the television, or switching on Sling TV or YouTube TV or Fubo TV or whatever it may be, kind of more of a cable TV provider or streaming TV provider. It's easier for them to go to switch it on, find the game, and watch it. Versus MLS Season Pass, which is, okay, all right, so now I need to get Apple TV, the app. Okay, great. Now within that Apple TV app is MLS Season Pass, and I have to subscribe. Okay, now I have to create an Apple ID. If you have an Apple ID, if you don't have one, you have to create one, even if you're an Android user or whoever. So the steps required to go ahead and just watch a single game on the spur of the moment are a lot more involved than just traditional methods, definitely. I think, yeah, there's definitely a lack of information out there. And to me, it doesn't help that, I mean, again, it's Apple, right? So the perception is if you don't, maybe you, a lot of people out there probably think, okay, you have to have an Apple device to be able to watch these games, or maybe you need an Apple TV to watch these games. When that isn't the case, but you need someone to kind of walk you through that. So yeah, those are all relevant issues. I mean, kind of going back to the point, which is talking about increased competition, the ease of accessibility of some of these other methods or these other leagues or these other teams are a lot easier. So that's certainly an issue. But the competitiveness too, we've seen this. I mean, just recently Man City against Arsenal in the Premier League was the most watched Premier League game in the US of all time. It was 2.59 million, basically 2.6 million people watched that. Over 500,000 people watched that on Peacock alone. You talked about USL quite a bit, Kartik. Obviously, you're an expert in USL and lower divisions. We saw this past weekend, USL had its very first game ever on network television, on over-the-air television. That game had more viewers on television. 362,000 people watched that game between Louisville and Indy 11, then watched the big MLS game this past weekend on television, which was El Tráfico, LAFC against LA Galaxy. That one had 211,000 people. What it doesn't include, of course, is the number of people that subscribe to MLS Season Pass and how many people watch the game on there. That's part of the issue, too, because the perception is, are people actually watching MLS Season Pass? And it depends which side of the fence you're on. One side of the fence will say, like, oh, my gosh, there's tens of millions of people watching MLS Season Pass games, right? All these streams. On the other side, there's very few people watching MLS Season Pass. Is that perception? And with Apple not providing any data in terms of viewership, that perception is always going to be out there, both sides, until you can actually show concrete proof and say, hey, Nielsen is reporting, or Apple's reporting, Apple in this case, Apple is reporting that for this LAFC, LA Galaxy derby this past weekend, we had, I don't know, 2 million people watching that game. It could be 2 million people watching that game on MLS Season Pass. It could be 200,000. It could be 80,000. We don't know. And without not knowing those numbers, the perception out there is that, yeah, maybe the competition is doing better. Maybe USL is actually inching, well, not even inching, is getting a lot closer to MLS numbers. What's your take, Kartik?
Yeah, so a couple points here. I think we have to be fair and say that, so you said that 500,000 on Peacock for that 2.5 million number for the Premier League game you mentioned. So if you take that same ratio, and then you kind of double or triple it, because MLS fans are accustomed to watching things on Apple. And we've seen this. Okay, I shouldn't say we've seen this, because ESPN Plus has the same issue with releasing numbers. But I've heard through the grapevine some Bundesliga matches, you get a pretty big bump. Games that are on ABC, there's a pretty big bump of people on ESPN Plus also, because they're accustomed to watching the whole league on ESPN Plus. You would still be looking at maybe adding to that 200,000, 211,000 number from El Tráfico, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 or 150,000 on Apple. It's not going to be two or three times the broadcast number. There's no precedent for that in media television history, right? Where a game is not only on linear television, but it's on broadcast, free to air television, and then there are three times as many people watching it on streaming. We just don't have any data from anything, including things like the Academy Awards, etc., that would back that. But I do think you have to give them the deference and say, okay, it's not 10,000, it's maybe more like 100 or 150,000. To your point about USL, so I am privy to some local television numbers, this is where local relevance and having a local product matters. So USL teams don't get significantly fewer viewers with their local linear or regional sports network, but mostly linear, actually, in the case of USL teams, broadcast deals than MLS teams did before abandoning of television, whether it was linear television or pay television locally for Apple Season Pass. So the USL numbers, for example, in places like Pittsburgh and Sacramento are not significantly lower than the broadcast deals that some of the MLS teams used to have prior to 2023 and everything being moved to Season Pass. So that's an indicator that the local relevance of USL in their markets is strong enough to where you throw a game on national television on CBS, you have people who are accustomed to watching USL games on television already in their local markets. So they're going to watch that USL broadcast on CBS, even if it's not their team playing. This is really important to understand. I think a lot of MLS fans don't necessarily comprehend this. They think of fans, and this might be the fault of like fans who support European football because there's no local team in their market, right? They watch Arsenal or they watch Bayern Munich, and they can live wherever in the United States. But I think part of USL's secret in building itself into maybe not quite a rival yet, but it's getting there, right?
Yep.
Where they're becoming competitive, is that they have really focused on, or I don't want to give the league credit for this because the league, quite frankly, I want to give the clubs credit for this. The clubs have built local relevance to where their fans are accustomed to watching games on television, not on stream, on television. That's the key. And then that translates to the national number.
Well, that's the thing, too, about, I mean, going back to our second point, which is competition from other leagues is greater than ever before, is what USL is doing effectively is filling the void where MLS has left all of the regional sports networks. And even though it's not regional sports networks that are showing these USL games, it's the local TV, which is, for some people, you know, just as important, if not more important in certain markets. And at the same time, too, the national television, you mean, with MLS games. Yes, there are some games on Fox, some games on FS1. I think MLS couldn't have chosen a worse TV partner, you know what I mean, to work with. I mean, Fox is not going to do anything for you in terms of promotion and marketing and really kind of helping out FS1, FS2. I mean, kind of they're all in the same bucket. But I think where USL has helped, has taken advantage in a good way in terms of competition is that kind of filling that void, giving, networks, over-the-air networks, an opportunity to show their local team on local TV or nationally. Going back to what you were saying, Kartik, before about that LAFC, LA Galaxy, El Tráfico Derby, possibly between 110,000 and 150,000 people to watch it on MLS Season Pass in terms of just, an educated guess. I think my take on that is it's a little bit too kind to MLS, given that though that game happened at the same exact time as a whole bunch of other MLS games. So you had Inter Miami against Colorado. You had several teams playing at that same time, that 7:30 kickoff time. When it comes to viewership, that's another issue. So instead of 110 to 150,000 people, who knows, right? Who knows how many people actually watch that game?
That's actually a good point. I mean, I'm thinking maybe collectively 150,000 people are watching MLS Season Pass at 7:30. But yeah, it's split up. And in fact, probably more people watching Season Pass are watching the games that are not on Fox, but just logically. So yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, or they're watching MLS 360, the Whip Around show.
Yeah.
You mean, because that game itself, the El Tráfico, I mean, to me, I thought the Louisville against Indy 11 was more exciting than El Tráfico. The El Tráfico, to me, didn't live up to the billing. You never know, right? Even the Man City against Arsenal game, the most watched game of all time in U.S. soccer history for the Premier League, depending on how you look at it, we've discussed this before, is either damp squib or incredible kind of battle. But we won't get into that.
You and I disagree on that.
I know, yeah. big time. I think, all right, we won't go there.
But on this point, I think, again, you have a situation, and I can't stress this enough, there are still people who turn on their televisions. And watch things that are on television. And this is something USL has been able to take advantage of. And even though they're not in all cases going to the same partners, MLS, RSN partners, MLS abandoned to do the Apple deal, What I've been told by multiple executives at multiple clubs in USL is that the appetite for filling local channels with local sports programming that was soccer related happened largely because MLS abandoned local TV. So understand that local broadcast affiliates in one city, in one market, may be owned by the same conglomerate that owned a station in another place that was abandoned by an MLS team to go to Apple. So then that conglomerate owns a station, let's just say hypothetically, in Pittsburgh, and they own one in Salt Lake City. Real Salt Lake went to Apple. They left them and left them empty. So then corporate says, hey, we have an affiliate in Pittsburgh. There's a USL team. Do a deal with that USL team. And that's kind of what's happened. So in Miami, the Miami-Fort Lauderdale market, there's a direct correlation, right? The station that got left high and dry by Inter Miami now carries Miami FC teams. That's a direct correlation because that's a market where the two leagues compete. But it did have an impact in other places because, as I think most of our listeners know, there's been huge media conglomeration. These stations are no longer independently owned and operated, right? These affiliate stations throughout the country, these linear channels, they're generally owned by larger media conglomerates. And every one of those media conglomerates had some sort of bad experience with MLS saying, hey, thank you for carrying our games for 27 years, or depending on the market, but we're gone. You know, we're going to Apple. So right. those corporate, I've heard from USL executives at USL clubs, I want to stress, not from the league, from clubs, that those corporate offices pressured or, you know, nudged the affiliates in USL markets, hey, why don't you do a deal with the Riverhounds? Why don't you do a deal with Sacramento Republic or whoever? Because they were left high and dry by MLS. So this can't be understated. Like, I know it's not something that's very pleasant for MLS fans to think about, but that is the law of unintended consequences. It's not something I could have predicted would happen, right? Well, but it happened.
Well, the other thing too, I mean, real quickly too, is that if you're a media executive and you're not a massive hardcore soccer fan and you watched Louisville against Indy 11 and you looked at that level, and I think a lot of people would say, like, hey, that's MLS level. I've seen MLS games that are, you mean, at the same level. It's not like a huge drop off between D1 and D2.
Yeah.
It all depends on which teams you're watching, right? But to me, watching that game, that felt like an MLS game, right? Yeah, the packed stadium, great atmosphere, great players, individual. You know, the Harris kid got a hat trick. It was a good look. It did not look inferior. So if you're a media executive, you're saying like, hey, you have an opportunity to show some of these USL games on a local TV station or whatever. I think it's a good look. Kartik, let's move on.
One last point. The interview I did with, I can't remember which CBS executive it was. It may have been Radovich. It may have been
Jeff Cotula.
Cotula. They did mention that the USL deal was with CBS involved kind of a push from local affiliates. If you remember, that's in the article. If you go back on World Soccer Talk and find it, that local affiliates wanted the program. So, because they knew they weren't going to get MLS ever now, or at least for 10 years. So there's a lot of elements in play here. And these are not things when we first, I know there are people who say, oh, all you guys talk about is MLS, is Apple and MLS season pass on the WST pod. These are like the law of intended consequences, Chris, that we could not have anticipated a year and a half ago when we started talking about this. Even as someone who follows USL, because my club plays in USL and I have a lower division background, I did not anticipate the accessibility of USL now and the success USL is having on television. I mean, I just did not. But it's happened because of the Apple deal. The correlation is unmistakable.
All right, let's move on to just a few more of these market conditions, which are having an impact either positively or negatively on MLS Season Pass. The next one is that the people who love MLS are getting MLS season pass for free. And what I mean by that is if you're a MLS season ticket holder, as part of your season ticket holder membership, you get MLS season pass for free. So the hardcore audience, most of the hardcore audience for Major League Soccer fans are the ones that are going to the games, that are living in those cities or near those cities where they can go to the games. So most of them are getting it for free. So then actually who's paying for MLS season pass, you mean, above and beyond that? And obviously there's a lot of people that do, but you mean that's an issue. That's one of those things where, yes, you can count those free MLS season pass subscriptions given to MLS season ticket holders as part of the total number of subscribers out there. But it is interesting, right? Then you have to try to appeal to the people outside of that. And it might be people outside those areas. So then you're looking at nationally, how much interest is there nationally in watching, you mean, Seattle against Colorado Rapids or New England Revolution against Real Salt Lake or whoever it may be. The Messi thing is certainly a huge hook. But that is an issue when you have the majority of your consumers, your customers already getting it for free. The next thing is sports fans. I think, Kartik, and hopefully you'll agree with this one. I think you will. I think there's still a feeling out there that in terms of the market conditions out there, sports fans are upset with Major League Soccer still about many of its teams abandoning the US Open Cup, about the whole referee incidents, which is thankfully over now. But really, the US Open Cup still continues to upset a lot of fans. And I know there's a lot of MLS supporter groups out there that have called for a boycott of this summer's League's Cup. What's your take on this? I mean, is your feeling too that there's people upset that they're not subscribing to MLS season pass as a result of all of the things that MLS tried to do with US Open Cup?
Yeah, I've actually spoken to some Orlando fans who canceled MLS season pass as a result. Now, granted, Orlando has, a little different relationship with the Open Cup as a club than a lot of MLS clubs. I mean, they really used Open Cup when they were in USL to catapult themselves towards being in MLS, and then they obviously won Open Cup as an MLS club. Although they also have the experience of losing to a lot of lower division clubs within the state, Fort Lauderdale, Miami FC, etc. But here's what I found. Now, again, I am a strong advocate of the Cup. I think everybody knows where I stand on that and how angry both you and I were, Chris, on December 15th when MLS pulled what they pulled. Yet I was under the impression it would blow over and MLS fans would close ranks. And while a lot have, there's still a segment that hasn't. And here's the problem for MLS on this. While the casual MLS fan who buys tickets or buys, you know, a mini pass or maybe even buys season tickets and goes to games on Saturdays, but doesn't think about MLS the rest of the week. They don't think about the Red Bulls. They don't think about Chicago Fire, etc. the rest of the week. Those people may not care about Open Cup, and they're like, oh, good, we don't have these midweek games against Des Moines or Omaha to worry about, if they even know that much. But the hardcore MLS fan, that is the one that buys merchandise, buys scarves, talks about MLS all week, does podcasts, does independent blog sites covering their teams in MLS, they're really still pissed off. I mean, when I talk to these people, they're more pissed off than I am. You know, basically, I'm like, okay, the tournament started. Those MLS teams aren't participating, but I have a tournament to cover. I'm just covering the teams that are in the tournament. Whereas they're still, I've been actually on a couple MLS supporter group podcasts. They're pissed off still, months into this. And now, as you mentioned, have said, several of them, including Orlando, since that's the group I'm familiar with, are saying, let's boycott Leagues Cup. You know, if it's an either-or thing, we know where we stand with Open Cup. So, again, when you're not selling that many subscriptions to begin with, right? We don't know how many of the 2 million number we heard from last year were free. We don't know how many of the 2 million actually renewed, because there is always a drop-off in things from year one to year two, just in general. I mean, if you start a club and you sell out the stadium year one, there's always going to be a challenge to hold over some of that audience for year two. It's just, even if you win the championship, that's just the way the market in soccer works in this country. I'm telling you this as someone who's worked in the game. to lose even, you know, a small percentage of supporters groups who are your hardcore audiences who are saying, we don't want to go to Leeds Cup. We're not going to buy Apple. We're not going to buy MLS season pass. We're Android users anyway. We had to do a workaround last year. That hurts your business. There's no question about it.
Yeah. And last year, I'm sure there were a lot of people who signed up for MLS season pass going into it blind, you mean hoping that it was going to be a great product, which it was, but I'm sure, I mean, what percentage of people, we don't know, but I'm sure some of them were like, okay, forget about it. I'm not going to subscribe for year two. And for some of them, it might've been the US Open Cup or kind of just MLS and all of their, obstination in terms of just being so difficult to deal with and not really being about the growth of soccer in this country and just trying to make it all about themselves, all about the greed, all about just making as much money as possible, controlling the market, controlling U.S. soccer, the U.S. Soccer Federation. That leaves a lot of ill will and kind of bad blood. So I think, we don't know how many subscribers are on MLS season pass for this year because it ended last year. They did hit that 2 million number, but you're right, Kartik, that number could have dipped. The other factor, which I don't think is a market condition, I mean, this is always going to be out there, but I do want to mention it, is that the buzz about Messi has died down. It's nowhere near what it was last summer with the Leagues Cup and just, I mean, everything that was happening that was so amazing. This year so far, 2024, we started it with the whole PR fiasco in Hong Kong and Tokyo and, losing badly to Al Hilal and Al Nasser in the Saudi Pro League in those friendlies. I mean, completely Inter Miami got completely outplayed in those games. Then you got into Messi. Is he injured? Is he going to play? The transparency, is he really injured or is he just resting or what's going on there? And when you go in, week out, not knowing whether Messi's going to play or not, that has a direct impact on MLS season pass subscriptions. Because I can tell you from personal experience is if Messi's playing, everybody knows he's playing and people are excited, those numbers shoot up with MLS season pass. When Messi's not playing or there's a concern or doubt about his fitness, it's plateau. It's plateau period where there's a lot less interest. So the Messi buzz kind of dying down. I'm sure it'll pick up if he keeps on playing. I'm sure it'll pick up if they advance in the CONCACAF Champions Cup and all the great things that come with that. But it certainly has died down.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.co.uk/sportsadfree. That's amazon.co.uk/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We always back an arse in the Grand National.
Just can't beat it.
That's the one everyone wants to win.
The one we've all been waiting for.
I love the National, but absolutely zero strategy behind who I choose.
I'm an each way man. I'll pick some at further outfield.
To be honest, my favourite, eh?
I always pick the favourite.
I back the outsider.
Whatever colour top they're wearing, that's me.
However you pick your Grand National horse, Betfred.
Abs, they're off.
Love the National.
Betfred.
18 plus with gambleaware.org.
All right, Kartik, let's move on to talking about the pros of MLS Season Pass. I will kick it off, if you don't mind. MLS 360, the whip-around show. Honestly, you and I have used Verissa all the time, quite a bit, all the different stream whip-around shows out there. For me, a lot of them are godsends, whether it's the Golasso show, just to be able to cover all the goals going in the Europa League. You go down the list, right? Goal Rush, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. MLS 360 to me is the best of breed in whip around shows worldwide. It's really well produced. I mean, Kevin Egan this year as the new host has made the show so much better. A lot of passion, great energy, really interesting to watch and to listen to as far as kind of him giving pointers about, okay, which games to watch or some of the backstories that are happening. Bradley Wright Phillips was fantastic in terms of his analysis. Sasha Clyston, I was very surprised last year how good he is. He continues to be really, really good. And Kaelin Kyle adds a different angle to it too and gives some good analysis. It's a really good chemistry. It's fun to watch. To me, that's my go-to. I mean, every weekend watching MLS 360, that's how, for the most part, I'm watching MLS is through that. Now and again, if it's a big game on, you mean Inter Miami playing whoever, I might watch that or I'll flip back and forth. But to me, MLS 360, for me, is worth MLS Season Pass to subscribe to it just for that alone. It may not be for everyone and the price point may not be in everyone's cup of tea. But to me, MLS 360 is the best of the best. Let's move on. Another pro, Kartik. I think it's actually this season, MLS Countdown, which is the pre-game preview show, which is hosted by Liam McHugh. It's gotten a lot better. It's really, really good. Again, you have some of this, the similar characters in terms of some of the MLS 360 people in there. But it does a really good job of setting the tone, setting the expectations in terms of what games are happening that day, what to look out for, some live look-ins, sometimes having some of the pre-match interviews with the commentators, the announcers, and showing some of the stadium, the build-up. It's a really, really good lead-in to MLS 360. Chime in, Kartik, if you have anything else to add to on MLS 360 or MLS Countdown so far.
Yeah, I think that they're both outstanding. I mean, MLS 360, easily the best wraparound show. You know, the Premier League's goal rush is a joke. It's a joke, the way they produce that. I mean, IMG, Premier League Productions, you have to do better. I mean, it's just effectively an alternative feed for another match, really. And then they occasionally break in with goal updates after the fact. And because we're in kind of a digital age, generally when I'm watching Goal Rush, I already know goals happened in another match, right? Yeah. And I'm waiting for the highlight. So I think 360 is much better.
Yeah, I wouldn't call Goal Rush a joke, but I would say I use it as more of a second screen experience. So same as you, Kartik, I know the goal has been scored before Goal Rush announces it. But what it helps me to do is I'll switch and focus on the Goal Rush and see, okay, how was that goal scored? How did it look? What was the build-up play about? So it gives me kind of a heads up before I actually watch it. So, but for sometimes for weekends or Saturday kickoffs, when there's a whole bunch of games happening where I don't have any allegiances or any preference about which game to watch. I mean, for me, it's a good second scene.
So there's also experience. The Bundesliga conference, which is, I think, better than Goal Rush, but doesn't have the linkages and the kind of commentary around it that MLS 360 has. So that's, and then I have never seen a whip around show from Spain. Maybe they'll produce one in the future and it'll be really good.
Or Italy.
Yeah. Well, the production of Serie A in general is poor, which I think is part of the reason why Serie A, which I tend to think is on a quality level, just football quality as high as any league in the world, why it drops off in terms of audience all over the world. It's their production quality is trash. So this is where MLS has an advantage. So yeah, keep going with your list because I know that's next.
Yeah. I mean, the next point I have in terms of the pro is the look and feel of things. It looks, I mean, the picture quality is crisp. I mean, the audio sounds fantastic. The production of games is so much better than what it used to be in what we were used to before MLS Season Pass. It looks good. It looks shiny. It looks new. It looks exciting. I think in many ways, more cameras. If you're watching a game. And the feature I like the most out of all of them is being able to switch to the local radio commentary for the home games. So sometimes for the Inter Miami games, I'll switch to the home radio commentary, which is Phil Shane and Thomas Rongen. Same for other cities, too. I'm sure there's other fans of in your home team where you want to listen sometimes to that home radio announcers. So that feature, that is another revolutionary part of MLS Season Pass that no one else is doing, being able to do that. So The last point I'd say is that in terms of a pro of MLS season pass, really it comes down to Messi and Suarez. I mean, those are two reasons that on a Saturday night or whenever it is, sometimes that makes a difference. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch and see what happens to Luis Suarez, how he does. You mean, how's his knees standing up? You mean, is he able to still have that spark, which he does from time to time? And Messi, of course, it's kind of a go-to, right? You have to see what he's doing. Like, you mean, is he upset and kind of like trying to, you mean, play out of showing his frustrations on the pitch and showing, I mean, basically his frustrations out by actually scoring goals and just punishing the other team that way. But in terms of his vision, how he plays, how the rest of the team goes up several levels when he's on the pitch, to me, the star power of just those two players alone makes the difference. I don't think there's any of this. Maybe Mukhtar from Nashville is another player I rate really highly. There's probably a few others too, but Messi and Suarez to me are the difference makers that make me want to watch MLS season pass. Even if it's a game I'm not really that concerned with, I'll watch them because of those two guys. Any other pros to mention, Kartik, that you can think of before we move on to cons?
I think that the most obvious pro is that it's consolidated in one place. So it's a one-stop shop to find everything. So my experience with USL, again, different for different people. This weekend, USL, I'm bouncing from my local CBS affiliate for the Miami FC game to ESPN Plus to watch the end of that game because the end of it gets preempted because of the CBS national broadcast. Then going back to CBS for the national broadcast, then going to Golazzo for the Rowdies game, then going back to ESPN Plus for the San Antonio game, then going back to Golazzo for the Oakland Monterey Bay game. So if I'm doing that for MLS, if I'm covering MLS the way I cover USL, I'm sitting on one platform all night.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah. And no blackouts on MLS season pass. I mean, it is once you have it and you're used to it, you mean it's easy. Getting there is a different story. Some of the cons. All right. So the cons, let's talk about those too. And actually on the cons, it's probably about the same number of cons as there are pros. The first con for me is really, I think Apple and Major League Soccer more so, has really let us down on the promises that they made when they launched MLS Season Pass of having really good additional coverage. So what I mean by that too is that, all right, you're watching MLS Season Pass over the weekend, or you're watching MLS 360 and you mean the countdown and the wrap up afterwards and all the great programming that happens in and around the games on a weekend. That's fantastic. But what's there on to watch on Monday through Friday? And if you go through, you mean some of that content's outdated. There's nothing there of really value that I'm like, okay, I have to watch this. Just as one example, I mean, I'm not sure if you listened to it, Kartik, if you had a chance yet. But last week's interview that Taylor Twellman did on his podcast with John Herdman about his life story, that blew my mind. Really, really great interview. And I was expecting to go into that interview, listening to it, and expecting John Herdman to talk about basically kind of X's and O's. But instead, he went on a different level, was talking about, I mean, his personal experiences in life, and going to different cultures and what he learned and how that helped him. And also his philosophy as far as coaching, not X's and O's, but in terms of empowerment, in terms of, you know, kind of self-help things, the things that help kind of elevate a club in terms of knowing what their goals are, but working together as a team. And I was like, why can't we get content like that on MLS Season Pass? Like, why can't we have a whole series of inside the minds of some of the best or most interesting coaches in Major League Soccer? It doesn't exist. And that's what was promised to us, I think, when we started with MLS Season Pass, is that there's going to be so much great content. It's going to be this and that. It's going to be team profiles and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. to me, I haven't seen any of that. There's nothing there that I'm going back to and going, okay, hey, oh my gosh, that's really, really insightful. That gives me a whole better appreciation or different appreciation of a team or the league as a whole, because they had some great content there. The second con, I think, is price. I mean, for some people, $99 a year or $15 a month is a drop in the bucket. For other people, that's a lot of money to add to, you know, whether it's cable or other streaming subscription services that they already have, or just to kind of the family budget, right? That's a lot of money to drop in one place. For some people, for others, it isn't. But it's still a factor because, you mean, for $6 a month, you can get Paramount Plus with, thousands of games a year. For $6 a month, you can get Peacock for 180 Premier League games a year, as well as, you know, U.S. Men's National Team and Women's National Team and the Olympics, so on and so forth. So price is certainly a factor. The third con, I think, is still that Android issue, which, yes, if you have an Android phone, you can watch games. You can watch it through a browser. There's no app available from Apple for Android devices. It's an issue. And you look at the U.S., the number of people that have Apple devices in the U.S., Apple phones, I mean, is, I think, between 70% and 80%. I think it's closer to 70%. So you have 70% of the audience in the U.S., but 30% of the people don't have it. But you look worldwide, which is really kind of where MLS is trying to push, and that adoption rate is quite different. Overseas, it's heavily much, much greater Android and much less on Apple. Just as one example, Kartik, there was a couple of weeks ago on MLS 360, one of the segments was Kevin Egan talking about, hey guys, talking to the audience, hey guys, we've got a trivia question coming up. The trivia question is, who's the all-time leading goal scorer in Major League Soccer? And I was like, that's a good question. Let me think about that one for a second. And then Kevin Egan was like, hey, to get the answer, go ahead and tell Siri, ask Siri, hey Siri, who's the MLS all-time goal scorer? And then it went to commercial break. And never gave the answer. And I'm like, wait a second. That cuts out, probably 60% of your international audience and probably 30% of your US audience just immediately, where I don't have an Apple phone. You mean, I don't have Siri. It makes me feel like, hey, I'm not involved in this. It makes me feel not part of the MLS season pass, even though I subscribe to it. Any personal experiences, Kartik? I know you're an iPhone user, but any personal experiences or anecdotes about the Android angle from people that you've run into?
Yeah, I've heard, and you know, I argue with these people. I try and so those people who think that I'm just very biased against MLS, I'm actually pushing them to understand that there are workarounds. There are ways of watching on an Android, or there are ways of watching on your Microsoft device, or if you Google Chromebooks. But I also have picked up in these conversations just a hostility to Apple as a corporation, a hostility to Apple as an entity, which I think happens with any large company. You know, people who tend to be anti-corporate, but it's much deeper than I thought it was with Apple, right? Because I mean, my orientation is, okay, there are people in my circles that don't like Walmart, that don't like Amazon, but I never really heard about the anti-Apple thing until MLS went there. So it's a problem, and I think just in general, it depends what your goal is. But if you're MLS, it may not be the smartest thing to try and disenfranchise half your potential audience off the bat, which is what this has done. Now, that's that certainly wasn't their intent with this deal, but that's how it's kind of it playing out, because there just is so much built-in hostility to Apple and so much apprehension about Apple devices among enough of a segment of the potential MLS viewer base or people who are MLS fans that you're never going to reach the critical mass you need to make this thing work, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for me personally, I'm not anti-Apple. It's just that I prefer, I mean, I have Apple computers, but I prefer the Android phone itself just because I'm more techie. I like to install things on my Android phone. And you mean, to me, I mean, there's lots of reasons why I prefer an Android.
By the way, Chris, sorry to jump in, but that's been where I've gotten a lot of the pushback is from tech people. Mm-hmm. People involved in tech, people who are kind of techie wonks like you, or people who actually work in tech, who are saying, I'm not getting an iPhone, I'm not getting an Apple product, I don't care if there's a workaround, I'm not subscribing to Season Pass.
Okay. All right. And then last but not least, Kartik, the last con I have about MLS Season Pass is the lack of quality commentators and co-commentators. And what I would say about this is that we've seen, ever since MLS Season Pass launched, almost every single game with Inter Miami, with Messi playing for Inter Miami in MLS Season Pass, in MLS or in Leagues Cup, almost every single one has been commentated by Jake Sivan and Taylor Twellman. And I caught some flack last week because you know, saying like, hey, you mean here's another game. It was the Inter Miami against Colorado game. And Taylor Swellman and Jake Sivan are not calling that game. So that means probably that Messi's not going to play that game. I was half joking, but half being serious too, because every single game they're calling those games. As it turned out, of course, Messi came on in the second half and played that game. But there's been only one other game, I think, in the past, since MLS Season Pass launched last year, where Jake Sivan and Taylor Twellman didn't call a game where Messi played. But it goes to my bigger point, which is that the lack of quality commentators. Why is Jake Sivan and Taylor Twellman calling every game involving Messi for Inter Miami? Like, don't you have like a second set of commentators, a commentary duo that's as strong or as bigger names or as good as those two guys? Why do you have to keep on using the same guys for almost every single broadcast? And coming up this weekend too, it's Inter Miami's game this weekend, Kartik, is Jake Sivan and Taylor Twellman calling the game. Without calling people out, which we have done, I have no problem doing it, but that's my criticism about the commentators specifically, is that MLS Season Pass needs greater depth in terms of their talent, because I mean, who is that second best commentary duo in MLS Season Pass in your estimation, Kartik?
I don't know that they need the depth, because I mean, if you watched other sports in this country, you realize that there's always like a commentary team associated with the biggest games, right? So going way back in NFL, it was Pat Summerall and John Madden. So, and it's a similar thing. You know, you knew watching the Premier League, if Martin Tyler was calling a match, it was a big match. Now, Sky tended to rotate a little more, but generally Tyler got the bigger games.
Right.
I mean, you would get Rob Hawthorne occasionally, Ian Dark occasionally in those days. So I don't think it's as big a deal. Well, now, it may be a big deal if you're thinking, well, Columbus is the best team or FC Cincinnati is the best team. Why do they keep assigning them to Inter Miami?
Well,
that's where it might be a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't that Martin Tyler was calling every single Liverpool game or every single Manchester United game. He would call.
Oh, no, I mean, Liverpool fans were convinced he was anti-Liverpool. So that, you know,
they
but
still
that's
are.
The subject.
They still are. But that's the perception, right? The perception is that if you're watching MLS Season Pass every single weekend, almost, except for two games, Jake Sivan and Taylor Twellman have called games, Inter Miami games, when Messi's been playing. So that sends a message that there's only one marquee game every single weekend in MLS. There's only one marquee game, and there's only one commentary duo that are marquee names, which is the Jake Sivan and Taylor Twellman. So what the message it sends to me is that all those other games, yeah, they're important, but nowhere near as important as Inter Miami and Messi. So what I'd like to see is kind of some rotation. Have Jake Sivan and Taylor Twellman call some other games, or have them, you mean, have Taylor Twellman partner somebody else, have a different commentator, have Jake Sivan with, I don't know, Danny Higginbotham, or whoever it may be, just mix it up a bit so that it's not so predictable. And you need to have, I mean, every weekend there should be some marquee games, but it doesn't have to be Inter Miami every single weekend, because otherwise, you mean, why watch the rest of the league? What incentive is there to watch the other league if MLS itself is positioning Inter Miami games as the only go-to game every single weekend? And then the other thing too, I mean, I mentioned the lack of quality co-commentators. I think for the most part, the co-commentators are very sterile. There's not a lot of really good analysis. I mean, Danny Higginbottom is one exception, but it just, I don't know, it's like very, very blasé. I mean, it's not a lot of, I mean, like my favorite co-commentators, Kartik, you have a bunch too, but I think Stuart Robson, Lee Dixon, and there's others, of course, but those are just two examples of people that really will call it as they see it, will give really good critical analysis in-game, and or will kind of show you or tell you things that are happening in the game that you're not seeing. And when you see it, you're like, the light bulb goes off. You're like, oh my gosh, that is some great analysis. Or sometimes with Lee Dixon, sometimes it's for some of his dry humor. I'm like kind of chuckling to myself at what he's saying. With MLS, it seems to be the co-commentators, it's kind of just like just talking, telling the backstories about the stats and this, that, and the other. They're not really sharing much insight. What's your feeling on this, Kartik?
Yeah, and this is, again, this is an observation that's not coming from me directly. This is coming from people I talk to. I've heard from multiple people their concerns and complaints about what they consider to be the just lack of really good commentary and outside of the 12-man Zivin team, you know, maybe Cangelosi and some others that they like, Max Brados, the lack of good commentators, the lack of edgy opinions commentary in analysis. And I have to say, truthfully, this is a problem in American soccer in general. I think there's very little critical analysis, if any, on NWSL broadcasts. I think those are even worse than MLS broadcasts. And USL is a mixed bag. There are some USL commentary teams I really like. There's some that I think are equally unwilling to punch, right? Unwilling to call it like it is. So
right.
I think this may be a greater cultural problem among American commentators of this sport.
Yeah. Well, the other part of this too is that with MLS Season Pass, all of those commentators are being paid for by MLS. It's not like, you mean Premier League broadcasts where you have, you mean, John Champion or Graeme Lasso or Lee Dixon. They're not paid by the Premier League. They're paid by NBC, the actual that broadcast in that country. So there's more of an opportunity if they want to be critical or to give critical insight or analysis, where they're not in fear of getting, you know, slapped around by the league because they said something that was not inappropriate, but something that didn't make the league look good. You still get that, I think, a little bit. I think NBC would be a little bit protective of not saying anything too critical because they want to maintain that relationship with the Premier League and have a good opportunity to renew that deal. But there's been many, many games where John Champion, as one example, calls it as he sees it and is very critical, pointing out what's happening in the stadium as far as protests or whatever it may be. He's not holding back. He's telling you what's happening. And for that, I give them a lot of, kudos. And then with MLS, it sometimes feels like somebody said in one of those articles in The Athletic about from one of the executives within one of the MLS clubs, watching an MLS Season Pass sometimes feels like you're listening to or watching state media, kind of the Pravda of the world, where you're being fed all this information, and it's basically kind of bullet points for Major League Soccer. It's not anything, I mean, the reality sometimes is missing there. Anything to add before we move on, Kartik?
No, that pretty much covers it.
Okay, we covered a lot there too. So let me just jump into listener mailbag. We've got some great insights from our listeners. First up is Dave. And Dave says, you mentioned a story in The Athletic coming across as a megaphone for Major League Soccer rather than as journalism. Advocacy for favored entities and associated credulity is a significant issue with mainstream media. As with all humans, World Soccer Talk writers have biases and preferences, but you stand out for calling things as you see them, including criticizing and raising tough questions about entities you support. Greg goes on to talk about the same topic and says, interesting points about The Athletic being uncritical. I read more of their pieces about European leagues, and most of the coverage there is fluff. They are far too credulous in interviews, similar to what they did with Garber. But some of that slams from their model, which was to hire as many blogger types covering local teams as they were hiring team beat reporters from other papers. Thus, so much outrage ends up being fluff pieces. That said, for European coverage, especially the UK, there's some standout reporters like Adam Crafton, Phil Hay, and a few others. And James Horncastle is great for his Serie A coverage. And to be honest, not sure how much MLS fans will get out of their coverage. It's really pretty sparse, maybe a few articles a week, nothing near the coverage they give to the European leagues or to the bigger American leagues in other sports for that matter.
Can I jump in for a second? I'm going to say I think that's spot on, and they hired a lot of kind of team bloggers and that sort of thing. And obviously, they hired people who had a bent towards MLS. I think it's even worse with NWSL. I mean, I think the Athletic's coverage of NWSL, despite breaking the big story they broke a couple of years ago, and we will give them credit for that. That was 3 years ago now, 2021. Since then, it feels like it's been one fluffy propaganda piece after another about that league. So I'm curious to see, as are others, how they're going to cover USL Super League, which is also sanctioned as a Division I league, when that starts in August. I think the Athletic is kind of, quote, on the clock with me in terms of the women's game now.
Yeah, that'll be one to watch, absolutely. My thoughts on this one is that, I mean, MLS is job security for many of the Athletic US reporters on soccer, because if these journalists weren't covering MLS, they'd be out of work, or at least out of the Athletic. There are some good writers there, for sure. I mean, Paul Tenorio, as one example of somebody who's, I think, does a really good job of reporting. But at the end of the day, they being the Athletic US, soccer coverage needs MLS to be successful to keep those reporters busy and with jobs, basically. If MLS went out of business, which is never going to happen, but if it did go out of business, what would these US-based Athletic soccer reporters write about? They should be covering the USL Super League, right? I mean, still now, today, it doesn't have to be all MLS-focused all the time. And I think, I think they're missing like a USMNT expert, and they don't have a Grant Wall, a kind of world football type person doing those big interviews. I think there's a lot of holes, but going back to what we said in previous weeks, I do feel that that the Athletic at times is kind of a mouthpiece for MLS, and they're not pushing back as much as they could in some of those interviews. They kind of basically taking Garber's word for what it is without doing some deeper, further questioning on what he's saying. And then just a few more comments, actually two more to go. Mike says, this is a really great question from Mike on YouTube. He says, I've just gotten into soccer in the past year and have really enjoyed your podcast. My question is regarding why teams don't sell jerseys, i.e. kits, without the sponsor logos. Are they contractually obligated to have the sponsor on all of the jerseys they sell? I like the look of soccer jerseys, but would never buy one with a sponsor. It just looks silly, and I'm not paying money to be a human billboard for corporations. Kartik, you have a lot of experience with this, I'm sure, having worked at different clubs.
Yeah, so I've heard the same thing from other soccer fans, Mike, basically, the sponsor is paying for the value of those replica jerseys, replica kits having the sponsor on. That having been said, a lot of clubs sell, or at least used to sell, training kits that were clean. without sponsors on it. And that's what I've done in some cases. I bought the training kit and it's felt like, you know, a regular kit. But here's the problem now. I've talked to executives across the soccer landscape who now tell me there might be more value in selling the training kits to sponsors than the actual match kits, because you take more pictures on social media, there's more social media sharing and all of that stuff of training. And maybe outings during the week where you're wearing something with training gear. So that probably is going away too, unfortunately.
Yeah, and Mike, yeah, the answer to the question is yes, they're contractually obligated. When you have whichever sponsor it is, you mean there's hundreds, thousands, they're paying to have their name on every single shirt that's sold. So that's their way of kind of advertising in a way. Now and again, if you're lucky, you will catch a team that's in transition. So like Chelsea, for example, were for a period of time, I think last year, without a sponsor. They were moving from one sponsor to the next, but hadn't quite had the new sponsorship deal in place. So you could have bought some Chelsea shirts without a sponsor. Inter Miami, another example from a couple of years ago where they were moving from one sponsor to another, actually didn't have a sponsor for quite a while. And you could get Inter Miami shirts without a sponsor name. But otherwise, for most clubs, it's always going to be on there. As an example, Kartik, as an anecdote on my side, my dad and I went to go see Wrexham play last August. And my dad he's originally from the Wrexham area, was excited to go into the club shop at the racecourse ground to get a Wrexham shirt. Because it's so hard to find, and sometimes going to the club shop, it's much easier to find. We walked into the store. He saw one of the Wrexham shirts, and he grabbed it, was going to buy it, but then looked at the front of the shirt. And he's like, why does it say United on the front? I'm like, that's a sponsor. He's like, well, do they have some without the United name? I said, no, that's United. He's like, I don't want to support Manchester United. It's like, no, it's United the Airlines. He's like, I don't want that. Forget about it. So we walked out of the club shop without him having bought anything other than maybe a keychain or something like that. For you and I and the hardcore soccer fans that have been around forever, basically, right? It's just something we take for granted. It's always going to be a sponsor's name on there. But yeah, for new fans like Mike, it is an issue.
But it's been an issue for years because before the takeover for Manchester City, I used to get, you know, and I used to have to go do, I mean, now you can get Manchester City things at any store in a mall. But in those days, I had to order from the UK and do currency conversion. It would be terrible, right? It was really tough. I mean, it was not a big club in American terms, right? And I would get my coach's shirt, not the kit, the coach's shirt or a polo, and it would always say Thomas Cook on it. So it was like, okay, that's fine. But then there are people that when I would wear that shirt in South Florida or in the Tampa Bay area or Orlando, wherever I was in the state, who thought I was working for the travel agency. More often than not in Orlando, actually, because Thomas Cook was known. So even then it was weird. Even 20 years ago, it was weird.
Yeah, same for me, Kartik. I had a Swansea City shirt that had Gulf Oil as a sponsor on the front.
Oh, yeah.
And I had people coming up to me and saying, like, hey, do you work for Gulf Oil? I'm like, no, this is my soccer shirt for my favorite team. And they were confused. They were like, huh? Like, why would you wear that with that on there? Which these days, too, right, as far as all the Asian betting companies. I mean, like, what is that even? I don't know. Yeah. So Mike, we totally understand. Two more comments to go from our listeners. You guys are doing fantastic as far as giving some great insight. Next up is John. He wants to talk about MLS Season Pass. He says, okay, early year number two for Apple and Apple TV, Major League Soccer. Some of my observations. I love the constant start times. The games look really good. However, that the announcers are just flat. And yeah, I think the announcers, I mean, like, we mentioned Jake Sivan and Taylor Twellman. I think as far as other announcers, Keith Costigan I like a lot in terms of he's really good, really has a great voice and really brings that energy to the game and really kind of does a great job of kind of reading the game. I'm trying to think of any other announcers that stand out that I'm like, kind of my go-to, like really, really excited to watch if they're calling a game. There aren't many. I mean, they're okay, but when John says they're just flat, I agree. I think a lot of them sound the same, right? It's just, I don't know. It's Max Paredes stands out as someone that has a bit of a spark, but the rest of them, I don't know. I can't think of any that jump out at me right now. All right. Last but not least, Chris says, I wanted to give my thoughts on the new USL League One team in Spokane after attending one of their home matches recently. I think the atmosphere is great, despite the stadium seating only 5,000. The stadium is centrally located, which makes it easy to get to via public transport or by walking. As someone who lives in the Washington State area, I will definitely be attending more Velocity games this summer. What do you think, Kartik? Are they on to a good thing there in Washington State?
Very, very good thing. And by the way, there'll be a USL Super League club there meeting in August called the Spokane Zephyr in the same stadium. So, yeah, they've drawn really well, Spokane. I do think it's kind of curious. This is how we know the U.S. Open Cup draw is legitimate and they're not just awarding it to the team with the better following. Spokane is playing at Las Vegas in the third round. And Las Vegas is a club that draws hundreds of people to their games. That's it. And Spokane is selling out a 5,000-seat stadium with not, you know, there's only standing room there. So U.S. Open Cup award, the draw, which we saw live, is at Las Vegas. And I actually commented to someone, hey, I think this is where I'm all for the draw and the transparency, but maybe in some cases you kind of want to rig it because there's – MLS is making this argument about, well, MLS is making this argument about revenue, Chris, honestly. Mm-hmm. And then if the game is going to a team that gets maybe one-tenth the paying customers of the other team, that's kind of an issue, plays into what MLS is talking about. So just maybe for this year, with all this controversy, I maybe would have found a way for Spokane to host that match.
So if you want to get in touch with us, let us know what you're thinking. You can call us at 561-247-4625. You can email us at web@worldsoccertalk.com or post comments on our website at worldsoccertalk.com. If you're on social media, tweet us at worldsoccertalk. Post your comments on youtube.com/worldsoccertalk or send us a message on Facebook at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. We'll read out your comments, notes, or suggestions on the next episode, and keep letting us know what you think of the show in your comments and reviews, and be sure to follow the show so you don't miss a future episode. Kartik, what can you tell us about Beyond the 90? What's going on as far as coverage there?
Yeah, tons of stuff on USL every week. Jonathan Starling's third half column, which he also breaks out midweek now, apparently for some games like the big Charleston-Louisville game, which was on CBS Sports Network last night. We're recording this on Wednesday. Four-part interview with NISA Commissioner John Prooch. I have to preface that this interview was done before protagonist began reporting. Knights who say NISA began reporting on the salary issues in the league, which I'm following up on and should have some stuff on there, in addition to the Florida soccer content and Miami FC hosting Tampa Bay this week, which is a derby. So heavy coverage over there on that site.
All right, listeners, thank you so much for listening. We will be back soon. In the meantime, enjoy your football.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.co.uk/sportsadfree. That's amazon.co.uk/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We always back an arse in the Grand National.
Just can't beat it.
That's the one everyone wants to win.
The one we've all been waiting for.
have the national, but absolutely zero strategy behind who I choose.
I'm an each way man. I'll pick some at third outfield.
To be honest, my favourite, eh?
I always pick the favourite.
I back the outsider.
Whatever colour top they're wearing, that's me.
However you pick your grand national horse, Betfred.
And they're off.
Love the national?
Betfred.
18 plus, begambleaware.org.